Now from Times Square, here's what you need to know.
It is good to see you guys. Yeah,
we missed you. I couldn't stay away. I missed you guys too.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay, let's put you back to work. You ready?
I'm ready.
Let's talk to America's favorite doctor. Let's talk about this recent measles outbreak. There have been 7 outbreaks with at least 121 reported cases this year.
Yeah, so this is an important medical headline, you guys, and I think if we remember back to 2020, we've learned how important it is to keep our eye on everything that's going on in the world of public health and infectious disease, and measles is a big one. Let me take you through it. First of all, some measles 101. This is actually the most highly contagious respiratory virus on Earth, with cold-like symptoms and a rash as the typical way that it presents. 9 out of 10 unvaccinated people, if exposed to measles, will become infected. It can easily be mistaken for another illness, and that's part of why the CDC is sounding the alarm, because so many healthcare providers have never actually seen a case of measles in this country. It is airborne, transmissible through the air. Children are particularly vulnerable, and we have a preventative way out of this, you guys, with a 2-dose vaccine that's 97% effective at preventing illness. Again, it's in our toolbox. It's not being used, and that's why the CDC continues to put this on our radar, because we're seeing cases go up and up and up.
We have seen the occasional outbreak here and there here in the United States. So is this particular outbreak any more concerning than the others?
It is. Year to date, it's 17-fold higher. And again, the vast majority of people, if infected with measles, will be fine. But it can cause serious illness, encephalitis, pneumonia, and particularly vulnerable are unvaccinated children. Almost all of these cases that we're tracking in this country are amongst unvaccinated people. So, again, totally unnecessary.
And alarming, to say the least. Thank you, Doc. We appreciate it.
Let's turn now to ABC's Zareen Shah in Los Angeles with our latest headlines. Good afternoon, Zareen.
Eva, we begin with the first former American president to stand trial on criminal charges. Former President Trump in court in Manhattan today as jury selection begins in the so-called hush money case. Trump has pleaded not guilty on 34 counts of falsifying business records. Prosecutors say that Trump was at the center of an alleged scheme to keep a story about an alleged affair with an adult film star from voters just before the 2016 presidential election. Trump has denied all wrongdoing. And the battle brewing over O.J. Simpson's estate after the former football star and convict passed away just last week. New questions about his will and whether the families of Simpson's late ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and Ron Goldman will receive any of the more than $30 million they were awarded in a civil suit that Simpson lost decades ago. And the new development in the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse in Baltimore. Sources familiar with the matter say the FBI is now probing whether there might have been any criminal wrongdoing in the crash of that vessel that brought down the bridge. The Justice Department says FBI agents were on the cargo ship this morning as part of that investigation. And now to our Ginger Z, who has a look at your weather.
The atmosphere is warming up for a severe weather outbreak this week. It'll start tonight, and that is parts of Nebraska, Kansas, and even southern South Dakota, all the way down into Texas, Abilene. Watch for damaging winds. Large hail is the main threat, but tornadoes possible, too. Tomorrow, that tornado threat ramps up even more. Iowa, Missouri, Illinois in the heart of it, but Arkansas, you'll be on the trailing end as well. And just to put into perspective where we are tornado-wise so far this year, the U.S. is below average, but look where the highest counts are. Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, and Florida, outside of traditional Tornado Alley.
And golf great Scottie Scheffler taking home his second green jacket in just 3 years, winning the legendary Masters Classic in Georgia this weekend with his wife at home about to give birth at any moment. The 27-year-old is the number one ranked golfer in the world. And excitement is building for tonight's historic WNBA draft tipping off in Brooklyn. Caitlin Clark expecting to hear her name called first, the college superstar about to turn pro, making her Saturday Night Live debut this weekend. All eyes will be on Clark, Angel Reese, and 36 other top college players tonight. And you can watch it all on ESPN tonight at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Guys, I was watching SNL. She was received with so much love. You could feel the excitement.
Yeah, people love her.
And could you imagine being her right
you
now?
You really do.
What's going through her mind? Like, this is the moment. This
I
is the night.
I can't imagine being her mama.
Very proud. Zareen, thank you, and good to see you, friend. Still ahead on GMA3 on this Monday, tensions rising in the Middle East. Our team with a deep dive on the latest.
And is beef in rap music back? The war of words between Kendrick, Drake, J. Cole, and more. We're going to explain it all in today's Monday Morning Quarterback.
Welcome back to GMA3. All eyes are on Israel as the world awaits the nation's next move. Israeli leaders are weighing their response to Iran's dramatic missile barrage that put the international community on high alert.
Iran launched more than 300 missiles and attack drones at Israel. This marked Iran's first ever direct military assault on that country. And joining us now with more on what's next is ABC News national correspondent Matt Gutman from Tel Aviv and senior White House correspondent Selena Wang from Washington, D.C. Matt, let's start with you. I mean, this was an unprecedented attack on Israeli forces, but they managed to block 99% of those drones and missiles. How?
It was a multi-layered approach, Eva. A lot of it had to do with a massive and very powerful international coalition led by the U.S. They picked up a lot of those drones, shot them out of the sky, as did they did with ballistic missiles as well. Israel picked up the slack, its own Air Force knocking out a lot of the drones. They also had anti-missile systems that for the medium range and the long range that acted and worked almost flawlessly. But the fact that it was such a big network of nations that were cooperating over a very busy and congested airspace and they managed to deconflict it really is unique. That's what also makes it not very replicable if Israel retaliates. And then there is another salvo of missiles from Iran, unclear that they can get this kind of international support again, Eva.
Selena, what did President Biden tell Netanyahu after the attack?
Well, DeMarco, the president essentially told Netanyahu to take the win, that he's already demonstrated that Israel's military is superior and that from here he should take things slow, think carefully and strategically about the risk of escalation. Now, the president also made clear to Netanyahu that if Israel decides to strike back, it will do so alone. It's clear that the U.S. was willing to defend Israel, but they're not going to go on the offensive. So right now, the ball is very much in Israel's court. But despite the pressure you've seen from the president and from U.S. officials on their Israeli counterparts, a senior administration official says that they believe Israel will strike back. And so the big question here is Netanyahu going to take the pressure from the president?
Okay, Matt, we have to talk about this. So, you know, Iran is saying this is all about retaliation. Israel's war cabinet has met. What are you hearing about what's going to happen next?
This is the second time they've met in as many days, Eva. They've been in there for hours now. We do not know the results of this meeting. Unclear if we will, even once they're over. The Israeli military definitely believes that it needs to respond somehow to that massive salvo of missiles from Iran. Otherwise, they're going to seem like a paper tiger. They need to reestablish a sense of deterrence, they say. And they say that they offered a spectrum of options to the Israeli government. Unclear what they're going to choose. But again, a lot is riding on this. And if it's too big of retaliation, it's unclear if Israel will be able to knock out all those missiles again if they come. If it's too small, does it reestablish that deterrence? It's very unclear right now. In the next couple of days are going to be people are going to be on tenterhooks here.
And Selena, we should also point out that the president met with G7 leaders. How are world leaders responding?
Look, this really rattled global leaders, including here in the United States. In fact, one senior official said that their hand was trembling when they were taking notes after learning that more than 100 ballistic missiles could be launched. When it comes to the G7 and the meeting that the president had with them, after they convened, they released a statement expressing their full solidarity and support for Israel. That show of support, that is a shift for Israel. Remember, they've been facing months of intense and harsh criticism over their military operations in Gaza. It was less than 2 weeks ago that President Biden threatened to change U.S. policy if Netanyahu doesn't do more to protect civilians in Gaza. So all of this coming at a time when President Biden and Netanyahu, they have this very frosty relationship. So the question is, how does that factor into the way the president is able to put pressure on Netanyahu when the president's first priority is to prevent this from escalating into a wider war?
And Matt, we just heard Selena talking about everything that's going on in Gaza. Does Israel really have the military power to both deal with what's happening in Gaza and also escalate a situation with Iran?
only if it stays as it is right now. And that is, it's a very low simmer of conflict right now in Gaza. Israel has a very small number of troops in Gaza, something like a brigade. They are just hanging on. And I am told by a U.S. official and Israeli officials at this point that it does not seem that any major invasion into the city of Rafah is imminent. That would require, you recall, the evacuation of about 1.5 million Palestinians to enclaves that are somehow protected by the international community, where they'll have food and water and hospitals. It also means that Israel has to muster troops, deploy them again, gather them. So we're probably a couple of weeks away from that, I'm told. So they will be able to try to handle the Iran threat, and the Israeli military is saying to us that the Iran threat right now is paramount. That is almost their sole focus at the moment, Eva.
ABC's Matt Gutman and Selena Wang, thank you to you both. Mm-hmm. Just ahead here on GMA3, the disses and the beef.
We know all too well, right? The war of words and rap between superstars. But could a little beef be good for the music industry? Monday morning quarterback Mike Muse joins us to break it all down for us. Come on back.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts. Step into the world of Hollywood like never before with Melissa Rivers' Group Text podcast. Melissa, renowned for her red carpet expertise and storytelling prowess, invites you to join her and her famous friends for hilarious and heartfelt conversations. From discussing the latest binge-worthy TV shows, navigating the highs and lows of life, and dissecting celebrity fashion, there is never a dull moment. With exclusive stories from special guests like Chelsea Handler, Cheryl Hines, your favorite reality stars, and deep dives into intriguing topics like the Where is Wendy Williams documentary, this podcast offers an insider's look into the glitz and glam of Tinseltown. It's not just Melissa's podcast. It's a collective experience where you're invited to join the conversation. So if you've ever wanted a peek behind the Hollywood curtain, subscribe to Melissa Rivers' Group Text podcast now on your favorite platform. Get ready for laughter, tears, gossip. In other words, unforgettable moments that'll keep you coming back for more. Don't miss out. This is one Group Text you won't want to exit.
All right, welcome back to GMA3. This weekend, social media was buzzing with the possible beef between three of hip-hop's biggest stars, superstars, Drake, Kendrick Lamar, and J. Cole.
And here to catch us up on what we need to know is our Monday morning quarterback, Mike Muse. I was off of social media all weekend, and I showed up on the Monday morning and was like, what is happening?
What's going on?
Okay, so there was some major beef. Break this down for us.
Whoa, did you pick the wrong weekend to be off of social media, right? Because hip-hop is back in such an incredible way. As we all know, the foundation of hip-hop is all about, like, battle rap, right? If you think about it, how it was formed in the Bronx, it's always, like, two persons kind of going at each other. And what you want is that crowd reaction, where you want the crowd to go, yo, no way, right? Because hip-hop is emotions. It's no different than, like, your sports player makes a slam dunk and the crowd goes, yo, no way. Like, that's the kind of reaction that hip-hop is. And so we've seen a hip-hop that's a foundation of that. And we've seen some incredible hip-hop battles that really have defined the genre of hip-hop to expand it to where it is. The most notable one, DeMarco, you and I have been talking about that, is the Tupac-Biggie beef.
West Coast versus East Coast.
But you saw the two of them really going to what we would say their lyrical bag, right? Their lyrical genius and being as creative as possible. And then you saw the next generation of rappers come arise, and that was Jay-Z and Nas. Two of the most prolific lyricists of our time for different reasons, they went at it in this incredible hip-hop beat that we still talk about today. Well, now you have the next generation of MCs that are carrying the torch, if you will, and that is J. Cole, Kendrick, and Drake. The three of them are the most dominant MCs currently in music for a multitude of different reasons. Drake for his commercial success, Kendrick's for his lyrical prowess, J. Cole for his fundamentals and lyricism of hip-hop. Well, recently, there was a time when J. Cole and Drake teamed up to create this song called First Person Shooter. And in that, J. Cole references that they are the big three, right? And then he goes on further, the big three meeting Drake, Kendrick, and Cole. But then Cole goes on to reference himself as Muhammad Ali. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, y'all. Kendrick Lamar did not like that at all. I mean, Kendrick Lamar has a Pulitzer Prize, right? And so what Kendrick did was on a Friday, he teamed up with Future and Metro Boomin, who was a hip-hop producer, and did a credible 16 bars and said, there is no big three, it's just me.
And it took off. It took off,
and then the world got to talking, Eva. But wait, there's more, as I love to say. The following week, J. Cole came out with his response to Kendrick Lamar. But afterwards, on Sunday at his Dreamville Festival, Eva DeMarco, he apologized. He said that he should not have done that. He should not have dissed Kendrick. His catalog is great. He took it off all the entire streaming platforms. But we were waiting to see what Drake was going to do. And on Friday, we all waited. Music Friday, nothing happened. But on Saturday, a diss track released.
Kicks back up.
Push Ups is the name of the song, and it created a firestorm where Drake responded to all of his enemies at the time. Future, Metro Boomin, The Weeknd, Rick Ross, and Kendrick Lamar.
Oh, you should go for everybody.
Oh, you know it. And you can't leave out the women. I mean, you look at Nicki Minaj versus Meg Thee Stallion, but you say this is good for music. It's good for the industry.
Absolutely. It's great for the hip-hop right now because of the fact of, like, it expands the genre. Like I said before, it's no different in sports than when you see your greats, right? Like, you think about Muhammad Ali and Frazier. Right, you think about who's the greatest, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, right? So you have all these greats that really expand and keep the conversation going.
But when does it cross the line? When does it become too much?
If it crosses the line when it gets into the real world and gets physical, then it crosses the line. But until then, it's great. But listen, I talked about Pulitzer Prize, and I talked about Jay-Z becoming the first rapper in the Songwriting Hall of Fame. This is no different. Hip-hop is American literature. Hip-hop is founded on allegories, alliterations, metaphors, and when you think about the feuds that's happened in American literature, all from the greats, from Ernest Hemingway, Fitzgerald, they had feud. Hemingway said, quote, if he could have had a fewer pompous musings and a little sounder education, it would have been better, maybe, talking about his literature. And then we have Proust and Lorraine. Lorraine says, one of those pretty little society boys who managed to get themselves pregnant with literature, to which they had a duel, DeMarco, which then goes too far. So in literature, has already been established.
Mike, thank you.
Well, what we know is the drama will continue, mm-hmm. and we will be here for it. Thank you, Mike Muse.
Let's go.
We'll see you next week for our next Monday Morning Quarterback. Up next here on GMA3, Dr. Jen's list of collagen boosting foods.
We are all ears, and we're also going on a field trip to Florida International University. Researchers there say a new treatment is showing tremendous promise among children with hard-to-treat cancer. Stay with us.
All right, Dr. Jen, this is in your expertise, okay. C-sections and pain.
Pain, yeah. So first of all, there are over a million C-sections done in this country every single year. It is a major laparotomy, major abdominal surgery, even though it's done for the birth of a baby. So pain control, pain relief is obviously a major issue, not just after, postoperatively, but during. Because mm-hmm. remember, in a C-section, ideally, the patient, the mom, is awake. So there was just a report done in an anesthesiology journal about the level of adequate pain control during surgery and found, according to this study, that there could be, even amongst 5,000 cases that they looked at, up to 24% of women say they did not have adequate pain control during a C-section.
So they felt a little bit of everything.
Well, it's unclear.
Everything
so
is a knife.
I want to talk you through. You know, usually we use epidural or spinal regional anesthesia, it's called, to get an adequate pain level for the patient. We do that for the protection of the patient and also for the protection of the fetus. We don't want to expose them to general anesthesia. And we test. We literally grab a clamp and we squeeze the skin and say, are you feeling anything, before we make that skin incision. And obviously, if the woman says, yes, I'm feeling that, we say, pain or just pressure? Will you feel grabbing? And if they say pain, we don't continue. But this really speaks to the issue of, you know, how much are these women feeling, and is it pressure or is it pain? And if it's pain, we need to do better, obviously.
Mm. I don't want to feel anything. I mean, clearly I'm a man.
Well, you do feel, but you do feel pressure, and we don't want people exposed to operative pain that can then go on to have long-lasting consequences. So really, really interesting.
All right, Doc, thank you. We're back in a moment. Eva's looking at me like, see what we have to go through?
Be glad you're a man.
Right.
No secret, it's a hit, guys. Welcome back to GMA3, What You Need to Know. That's the Shakira hit, Hips Don't Lie. And the Colombian superstar shaking things up at Coachella, announcing her first world tour in 7 years, by the way, and fans are very excited about it.
Yes, all the way those people turned out in Times Square with no time.
Oh, so many people, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That tells you how much they love her.
For sure.
Dr. Jen's back, and she's got an answer to one of the health and wellness questions that you are asking. Here it is. What benefits does collagen powder have?
Well, you and I talk about this not
infrequently.
A week. I know.
All the time.
So here's the thing. Collagen is the most abundant protein we have in our body. So implicated in everything from the strength of the walls of our blood vessels to our skin, to our hair, to our nails, you name it. It's that supportive protein. There's been a lot of attention and some data recently, more recently, to suggest that when we ingest collagen in our diet, that it could potentially have a beneficial effect on the collagen that we see, hair, skin, nails, that type of thing. It's very controversial because, remember, anything we eat can be broken down and inactivated in our stomach with the stomach acid in our normal digestive process. But there's also some data to suggest that collagen powders, and I put one in my smoothie every day, so I figure low risk, maybe a benefit, I'll take it, can actually work. It's usually hydrolyzed bovine collagen, and there have been some studies to suggest that it improves skin, elasticity, can reduce wrinkles. Again, risk benefit, probably low risk, maybe a benefit, I'll take it.
But it doesn't hurt to try it.
In my book, placebo effect, I think positively. But anyway, more research is definitely ongoing and very, very interesting in the world of dermatology and nutrition.
All right, your prescription for wellness.
Staying on the topic, some foods that we can eat, because you know you've heard me say it before, it's always best to get our supplements from whole food sources. So collagen-rich foods, yes, so you can shop your grocery store for this. Bone broth. Easy, and by the way, it doesn't taste bad, so that's one. Any protein-rich food, pretty much, is going to increase our collagen, and food-rich is in vitamin C, zinc, copper, all those things really good for collagen. We really should be getting these things from our diet rather than supplements.
All right, you have spoken. Thank you very much. And folks, we would love to hear from you, so be sure to hit us up on Instagram with all of your medical questions for Dr. Jen at ABCGMA3. When we come back, a childhood cancer diagnosis can be so devastating for families.
What researchers in Florida are calling an important new possible breakthrough. Stay with us.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Cancer researchers at Florida International University say they have developed a groundbreaking treatment that shows promise for hard-to-treat cancers. It's first success seen in clinical trials with pediatric patients who've relapsed.
83% of the children reportedly showing improvement, and that includes Logan Jenner, who has been battling cancer since he was 3 years old. Here's ABC's Victor Okendo.
How would you describe your son, Logan?
I would describe Logan as a miracle.
This is
At just 3 years old, Logan Jenner was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia, an aggressive cancer of the blood and bone marrow. Logan went through 4 rounds of chemotherapy, followed by a bone marrow transplant, before going into remission.
For the first year, he was doing really well, and then unfortunately in February of the next year, we found out that he had relapsed.
According to the American Cancer Society, cancer is the second leading cause of death in children under 15.
Were you afraid that cancer was going to take his life this time around?
Yes, I was. It really shook my faith a lot. No.
Logan's oncologist told the Jenners about a clinical trial at Florida International University.
We are the first to guide individualized treatments in children that have hard-to-treat cancers. Functional drug testing, in simple terms, is testing of hundreds of FDA-approved drugs directly on the patient's own living cancer cells in the lab and identifying which drugs work and which don't for each individual patient.
So you're finding exactly which drugs work on which specific patient.
Exactly. And we are showing that we can identify treatments or which combinations of drugs work and which don't, and give results back to the doctors within a week. Turning around results to doctors quickly is very important and critical when we're dealing with children with cancers that have very progressive diseases or cancers that get worse day by day.
Let me just put my gloves on.
Dr. Razam and her team of researchers look at cancer cells for a number of patients to guide treatment as a part of the trial. Logan was simply known as patient 13.
So what did you discover worked in patient number 13's cancer sample?
One important one that we found was that 2 drug combinations were as effective as 3 drugs. And so his doctor could eliminate one of these drugs from his treatment. The other important result from the testing was we identified which drug that is targeted to his mutation. And the third interesting observation that was important information for his treatment was that his cancer cells in the lab doubled with steroids.
Logan's oncologist, Dr. Fader, applied Dr. Razam's analysis of which FDA-approved drug regimen would best target Logan's cancer cells to create a personalized treatment for him, and he went into remission.
How much faster did this treatment work?
Instead of 4 cycles, he needed 2, which is good, especially considering it was a relapse case. I think it was about 35 days he goes into remission. And it's not only the fact that he went into remission, right, which is a miracle on its own. It saved him so much time from being in the hospital. It saved him, you know, just having to take all these other medications that he didn't need.
How did Dr. Razam's work help Logan's fight against cancer?
Dr. Razam's fight made him thrive when there was no hope, really, when almost all hope was lost.
While this study was just on a small sample of patients and this type of treatment is not yet widely available, Dr. Razam is continuing her research in the hopes to help others.
I hope and I believe that using this approach that the day will come where we can transform cancer into a chronic treatable disease, just like diabetes.
2 years later, Logan is now 8 years old and healthy.
I tell her this all the time. I share Logan with her. You know, I really do. He's my son, and I brought him into this world, but she saved him. Her and Dr. Fader saved him.
I kicked cancer's butt.
Oh, yes, you did, Logan.
Wow. So
I know how brave and important research there.
Yes, giving those children less time on those drugs and more time to be kids.
And a ton of hope there, too. Many thanks to Victor for that report. Still ahead on GMA3, empowering young girls when it comes to money.
Our next guest says financial habits begin forming at age 3. Huh? Ooh. What you need to know on this Money Monday. We'll be right back.
All right, welcome back to GMA3. It is time now for Money Monday. And if you've ever wondered how to talk to your little ones about money, don't worry, folks. Our next guest is here to help.
She is sharing her tools and tips to empower financially savvy kids and in particular young women. Please welcome the founder of Inspired Capital and author of Growing Up Powerful, Money Matters, Alexa Von Tobel. Thank you so much.
Good to see you.
Thank you. So this kind of blew my mind, but you say kids learn money habits starting at 3 years old. So kind of What information about that do we need to know? And you wrote a book about this to help us parents.
So first, there's a study out of the University of Michigan that shows that kids as early as 3, 4, 5, they're already picking up money habits that young. So if you have a positive relationship to money for your kids, they're going to have a more positive relationship. And if you have a negative one, they're going to pick it up. So I decided to write the book after writing a bunch of other books and being a New York Times bestseller to pay it forward to this next generation.
And you focus on tips for young girls.
Yep.
Why is it important to make them feel that money is real?
Great question. So I spent a lot of my time in my last 20 years helping people in their 20s and 30s get out of credit card debt, fix their credit score, and play defense. And it really dawned on me that since financial literacy is still not taught in schools or high schools anywhere, and it's so critical, that we got to help kids play offense. And so as early as second grade, kids can really understand the full suite of money. And so writing a book to help this next generation play offense for their money to get ahead of the problems just felt right to me. And especially, I have three little kids and I wanted to do it for them.
But is there a learning curve with boys versus girls when it comes to finances?
It's all the same, but we know that still money often feels like a male topic, and we've got to rewrite all of that history and make it something that every little girl feels like they can be empowered in.
You say teaching your child delayed gratification when it comes to money can be particularly helpful.
Yes, money is habit. So think about our retirement. I like to call it retirement spending, by the way, instead of retirement savings. I don't know about you guys. I want to have a fabulous retirement.
Yes.
So whenever I save, I'm like, that's to spend big later. It's the same for kids. And you're just teaching them those really simple habits of anytime they get any money, I like to do three little piggy banks, a small one, a medium one, and a big one. The big one's for college, the small one's for a cupcake. And when they get money from grandparents or for chores, we put it in, and just naturally they're seeing that habit forming of anytime you make some money, you got to put it away. And just teaching it early, it becomes second nature for them, which is so incredibly critical.
And you also talk about the importance of teaching kids while they're young to start their own businesses, become entrepreneurs.
Yes. So back to that tone around work and around money. Whenever I leave my kids, and I know you guys know this too, they're always, don't leave mom. And I say, you know what? Instead of saying, mommy, oh, sorry, mommy's got to go to work, I don't want to go to work, I say, mommy loves work. You know how you love puzzles? Mommy loves puzzles. And I do big ones at work, and they involve people and
businesses. I don't
think
I ever heard my mom say she loves work.
And trying to reframe it so that they look forward to understanding, because we all have to work for the rest of our lives.
Right.
It's a big part of our life. And so for kids, what I like to do around entrepreneurship is make two lists. What do you love to do, and what are you good at? And my 9-year-old Toby, she loves to make bracelets, and she's really good at it. So we started a little business called Cecilia, as I'm wearing them, actually.
Nice.
And she sells them for $10, and she started her own little business, and she's learning the habits of hard work. And then a final hack is we take that money, and we put it in a Roth IRA.
Yes, yes.
And there you go. It's an extra decade on retirement savings.
See, I love that. You can also go back to the classic, the lemonade stand for kids.
Exactly.
Too. Yeah, every chance to make money, and they're not making enough that they have to pay taxes on it yet. So.
Exactly. Amen. Amen. So.
That is a big amen. Alexa, thank you very much. We appreciate
thank
it. Thanks
you guys
for being
for
here.
Having me.
And be sure to check out Growing Up Powerful, Money Matters, wherever books are sold. When we come back, Growner star Marcus Scribner is in the house.
He joins us here in studio with some thoughts on the hit's spinoff's final season. Crazy to think that, right? Stay with us here. We'll be right back.
I am so evolved now. I'm not even going to roast you about your TikTok shop pants. Not saying a word.
Anyways, tonight is about both Johnsons, because I'm no longer little brother. I am an A-list manager who gets things done. So I'm gonna ignore all of that, and I'm gonna use my networking magic on all of her VIP guests tonight.
Wow, this is the venue for your fashion show?
This place is big time. Break a leg, Zozo.
Thank you.
This is insane.
You think the outside is great, just wait until you see the inside. Look! What?
He's a grown man now. Can you believe it? Yeah, welcome back to GMA3. That was a clip of Freeform's hit comedy, Grownish, and it is the sixth and final season of the Black-ish spinoff following Junior as he closes out his college years.
And here to tell us all about it is the star of the show. Please welcome Marcus Scribner.
What's going on? How you guys doing?
6'2", Marcus, right?
We can't get over like how grown you are.
I know, it's crazy. It was a bit of a jump scare seeing the mustache on camera. I'm like, I shaved everything off for the first time in a while. I'm like, I feel naked almost. Oh. Yeah.
So you're halfway through this final season. What can people expect?
It's going to be a close to a story that's been evolving for 10 plus years at this point now. Junior has gone from, you know, 13 years old to where he is now in a crazy love triangle on Grownish, and becoming a manager and figuring out what he wants and stepping out from the shadow of his sister that he's been in for so many years. And I just really appreciate that we got the opportunity to close his story out, and we're going to do it with a bang. The final episode is one of my favorite episodes I've ever shot. So,
but, I mean, you've been playing Junior for a decade now, so what has it been like just to watch that growth that you just talked about over the years?
It is so weird to be 24 and then to be able to say that I've, like, played a character for a decade. It's like, in a way, I feel like a rookie and a veteran at the same time.
You just got to make us feel old over here.
No, sorry. But it's crazy, you know, looking back at all of the things that I've been able to do and the years that I've spent on the show and all the things that I've absorbed from everybody around me. I was fortunate enough to grow up with so many veteran actors and people in the industry who've been doing it for years. And I'm grateful. I'm thankful. And I feel like I took every learning lesson and hopefully going to be able to apply it in every aspect of life and career. So.
And, you know, we talked about that it's the end of the franchise, which, by the way, I don't see why that has to be. There could be oldish.
I know.
There could be middle-age-ish.
There's so many. Kenya's thinking of all of them. There's so many routes to
no
go.
No need to end it with grown-ish. What do you want to do next? What are you working on that's exciting?
I just moved to New York, so I'm trying to break into the theater scene a little bit more. I just want to learn and take in as much as possible right now. I feel like this is the best time to do it. I started a production company called Scribner Productions, focused on uplifting Black voices and bringing them into spaces that I enjoy, like fantasy and, you know, things that are really cool to me. And I just want to continue to do projects and focus on roles that I really enjoy and scripts that I respond to. So those are the goals forthcoming. I think that's the right word.
Yeah.
I mean, you're already ahead of the game.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you lost? I mean, obviously you gained a lot from growing up in front of the camera, but are there things that you look back and say, like, you know, it's not too late to, you know, do this because I couldn't really do that. I was working so much.
Oh, man. I feel like for a long time I kind of did have that perspective on some things, and recently I've just been comfortable in where I am and just I've come to the point where I'm like, I want to learn and expand and grow as an actor and a human.
But you were able to enjoy growing up.
I was able to enjoy growing up, and I had parents who really focused. I'm from Los Angeles, so I had my whole friend group was there, all of my family members. So was fortunate enough to have a pretty normal upbringing. I was still, you know, taking out the trash, walking the dog. I had my chores.
Yeah, good.
It's very important. Exactly. So
had the chores. That's funny. That's funny. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me.
So
congrats. And Grown-ish airs Wednesdays at 10 p.m. on Freeform, and it streams the next day on Hulu.
And that is what you need to know for today. I'm DeMarco Morgan.
I'm Eva Pilgrim.
And I'm Dr. Jen Ashton.
For all of us here at ABC News, and Marcus, who's singing.
Sorry,
I'm
singing over the closing. They put on a ball.
Keep going, man.
Thank you,
everyone. Bravo.
Turn his mic up.
Step into the world of Hollywood like never before with Melissa Rivers' Group Text Podcast. Melissa, renowned for her red carpet expertise and storytelling prowess, invites you to join her and her famous friends for hilarious and heartfelt conversations. From discussing the latest binge-worthy TV shows, navigating the highs and lows of life, and dissecting celebrity fashion, there is never a dull moment. With exclusive stories from special guests like Chelsea Handler, Cheryl Hines, your favorite reality stars, and deep dives into intriguing topics like the Where is Wendy Williams documentary, this podcast offers an insider's look into the glitz and glam of Tinseltown. It's not just Melissa's podcast. It's a collective experience where you're invited to join the conversation. So if you've ever wanted a peek behind the Hollywood curtain, subscribe to Melissa Rivers Group Text Podcast, now on your favorite platform. Get ready for laughter, tears, gossip. In other words, unforgettable moments that'll keep you coming back for more. Don't miss out. This is one group text you won't want to exit.